This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, Sizzling at 70, Victim to Victorious, and the author is Lynn Trail. And Lynn joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to you by Balboa Press. Hello, Lynn.
Hello, how are you?
Well, it's great to talk to a sizzling 70 woman, that you're just on top of the world.
Absolutely, this time of my life.
Well, good for you and good for us. We're going to learn about your life in this discussion about your book, Sizzling at 70, and you're down in Australia. Let me read what you've written, just in kind of a quick summary about your book, then we'll get into the details. You say this: this is a self-help memoir of a life of abuse and victimhood that has been positively transformed. Lynn has used her own experience to illustrate how life can change when we become better observers. I like that, observers. We're going to talk about those details, about what that means. You also say, included at the end of each chapter are useful guidelines that will enable the reader to clear away the dead embers of victimhood and ignite the sizzle they may have thought had disappeared. Lynn's victory is proof that it's never too late to start sizzling. Well, you're a great example because you walk the talk.
Yes, well, it took a long time. I was a very late sizzler, certainly wasn't sizzling in my 40s or 50s, so I've been enjoying sizzling in later life.
So you were a victim.
Yes, and I was really badly abused as a child, physically, emotionally, and sexually from a young age, and of course, unbeknown to yourself, you do grow up as a victim.
Now, you talk about this observing, and it comes out of a study of some kind of behavioral practice called ontology.
Yes, and ontology is really way of being, and it really is helping you observe your language, which creates your reality, and what mood you're in, because whatever mood you're in, that's how you're going to act, and then how that affects the whole body. And this has been huge, you know, to be able to observe what I didn't realize was happening for me and what mood I was in. So it was a good framework for me.
Why is it so important for us to be open about our lives?
Well, it's interesting. The word shame comes to me all the time, because I lived in shame all the time as a young child and a teenager. I didn't want people to know what was going on at home. So I've actually been very open, and people said, how can you be so open? I said, well, I needed to give people permission. You know, shame's all about keeping secrets, and you can't progress while you're living in shame. And so I elected to be really open about my life. I mean, there's a lot in there that got cut out by the editor, but, you know, I have really, and for me that was a huge thing after living in shame and secrets for so many years.
So you look back on your childhood now, how do you feel about it?
Well, I'm grateful for it now, because I've learned so much. I spent so much of my time feeling shameful, living, being inauthentic. I used to write poetry, you know, how was I ever going to be, you know, normal, and the living's prison. It was a very unhappy childhood, a very solitary childhood, and the thing that got me through, I was a real tomboy, so I used to live on the roof, and that was where nobody would come on the roof, and that was what used to protect me. But I got stuck getting down a chimney once, trying to find out how Father Christmas got down the chimney. So I was lucky, a bit of a tomboy, an adventurer, and I think that really helped me a lot. Lived in fantasy world a lot.
Why did it take you so long to escape what you call this victimhood?
Yes, well, I think when you don't know how to get out of it, self-esteem is a huge thing. For me, I didn't ever feel good enough. I used to try and be like other people. I really just didn't live my normal, authentic life. And then, as a lot of abused children do, go into an abusive marriage and get told that you're useless and hopeless for a long time. And so it just exacerbated. And then out of that marriage and into another marriage where this new husband's girlfriend turned up on our honeymoon, you just attract all this negativity to you. And so your self-esteem gets worse and worse. And then suddenly thinking, I've got to do something about that, but it's like, where do I go? I started studying, you know, NLP, a whole lot of different disciplines that gradually pulled some layers off. But as I say, it was only really when I studied ontology that I actually got a framework where I could observe what was happening to me and think, oh, gee, I'm really in this mood of resentment. Hey, so where do I go from here? And that's been absolutely wonderful for me, and now I feel authentic.
Well, your book is, as we mentioned, is this memoir, and you have some interesting chapter titles of, you know, it starts out, of course, living in a soup of negativity, and we're talking a little bit about that, but I guess we really don't understand the impact of all that negative stuff that has on it. How did you turn it around? I mean, was there an event, or was it the discovery of ontology, or what was the motivation to kind of take this leap into this new world of positive thinking?
Well, I think it's a gradual thing. I think when you've been abused, you're looking for love all the time, and sometimes you really put yourself at risk. But I thought if I could get married and have a family, and I always wanted a child. I got married at 19. I had a little girl at 20 who was absolutely beautiful, and I wanted to give her a life so different from mine. So it was gradually living, but still living inauthentically. It was never my life. So I'd start looking at things. I was involved in religion for a little while, but I found it, well, for a long time, but found it really didn't help me, my self-esteem. I started looking in different areas. So I think it's been a gradual thing. And as I've got older and been a little bit successful in, I wrote some children's books and then I wrote some plays. But I always felt when people said, oh, you're doing well, I was tricking them, but they'd find out I really wasn't as good as they thought I was. So it was only really the ontology, I suppose, is the thing that has helped me to become authentic, because I had to look at, well, you know, what language are you using? And the mood framework was just amazing, because you look at, am I in resentment? And I hadn't realised I was still really resentful about my childhood, blaming my childhood for everything that happened. So I had to realise I couldn't change my childhood. It was there, and I had to now work out a way to move on. Not with, oh, you know, I'm never going to be any good, which is what I used to say. I had to change the language from, yeah, look, this happened, and it was pretty awful, and I wish it hadn't, but I can't change it. So where am I going to go from here? And very conscious, being conscious of that, and then being aware that the possibilities, and I used to think, well, no, nothing good will happen to me. I'm just not good enough. And being consciously aware, this resignation was just stopping all my possibilities, and then consciously going into ambition, well, I can get past this. You know, I can really make this change. But the most wonderful thing for me was realizing I was in anxiety, deep anxiety, which sometimes comes back to haunt me. But what was I think is amazing is this feeling of wonder and curiosity. I wonder what I can do to make this change. I wonder what I will do. That effect absolutely transformed my life and gradually changed the way I felt. But not only that, it changes your physiology, because in ontology, Maturana is sort of discovered that the nervous system is configured a certain way, and we respond to things because of the configuration of our nervous system, and you can actually change that. And it takes time, but you need to be aware. That's a long-winded explanation to what happened to me.
Well, this book, as we've mentioned, is a combination of a bio and self-help guide. And after each chapter of your story, you describe how the chapter had affected your life. Now, and the steps you could have taken. Now, tell us more about this reflection after each chapter.
Yes, now I've heard some people have said they just wanted to read the story, and that's fine, you know, that it's an interesting story. I've had an amazing life. So, but at the end of each chapter, I've said, well, things to reflect on. This has been about a mood of resentment, so being aware of what resentment is and how it affects your life. And then at the bottom of that, I said, these are things you might try, the things that have helped me and have helped others. And what I've found has been really exciting. I've had people who've read the book ring me and say, I would like you to coach me and work with me, which is really exciting because that's a lot of the work that I do. And that's really why I wrote the book in the first place. So I will go to these people and they'll already have read the book and said, oh, I've now identified that I'm actually in a mood of resentment. Now, how are we going to work from there? So I can work with them. I mean, they decide how we work, and it's just having that other person, particularly as you've been through it. And I don't say, well, this is what you have to do at all, but having read the book and looking at some of the possibilities, they're really eager to try out some of these steps, and I just get so excited when I see the shifts, when people become better observers. It's just really exciting.
And those who have known you for many years, they can't believe the change in you.
Yes, and some people don't like it. I have friends from so many years who actually quite like me better when I was broken. I think they find me a bit challenging now, so that's been interesting.
Well, you look younger and you act younger than you did 20 years ago, and you say you're just kind of, your step is lighter, and you laugh.
And I think laughter is the big, big key. At a time when I wasn't going through a really good place and I realized I hadn't laughed much, I joined a laughing yoga group and we sat around in the park, we stood around the park and laughed and people would ride by on bikes and think, who are this mad lot? But I think laughter is really important and since I've been blessed with a good sense of humor. And also possibly I see the world as half full, and I think up to a point I always have, and I always feel sorry for people who look at the half-empty glass. So that's probably something I'm very fortunate to have. And yes, it is. You know, and I'm fit. I can do exercises, which I think is a really important part of that, you know, looking after your body and feeling good about who you are.
And it's never too late.
Absolutely never too late, because even in my 50s, I didn't feel good about who I was. I allowed people to come into my life who really used and abused me, and now that never happens now. Mind you, I have I met my lovely husband. I used to watch him on television in the 60s, and I loved this man, this leader of this band, and I thought, I'll never be free like that. And then 8 years ago, I met this person, and I didn't recognize him at first, but actually is that lead singer who I'm now married to, the lead singer of this group I used to watch on television so many years ago, who I thought I'd never be good enough to be with. So we have a wonderful life, but I wouldn't have been ready for him, you know, 15 years ago. He probably wouldn't have looked twice at me, but we have this wonderful life, and I feel very blessed.
So life is a journey.
It certainly is.
You know, it's not some far-off destination. As someone said, somehow we have to smell the roses along the way. Is that what you feel you're doing now?
Oh, absolutely. We live near a beach now, and we have all these colored birds come, and I see them come, and I really appreciate everything that I see and feel so grateful. And what I find is really interesting, I draw really positive people to me, whereas years ago all the lame ducks used to come flocking and I try and help them, and my whole life changed. The people that I have in my life are so positive and full of energy, and I just find it so exciting.
So life is sizzling at 70.
It certainly is. Absolutely.
Lynn Trail, tell us about, let's see, we have what, trailblaze.com. That's spelled trail with two L's, trailblaze.com. What are you doing?
Well, I used to be in education. I was a consultant in education until I turned 55. And I found the direction it was going in and what was happening was really a bit disturbing. And out of the blue, I actually just resigned from education and started my own company called Trailblaze Communications. So I got into, first of all, training and, training for companies, and then more morphed into consulting with CEOs on communication issues and strategy. And I've really enjoyed, and still do, I still am a coach and consultant with organizations and individuals. People will ask me to coach them through certain situations, whatever it is that they need. So, and the book was really written as an adjunct to that, but it's become bigger than I thought it would. So I will do this till the day I die. It's, you know, while people want me to work in their companies, I will do that. And I have some diagnostic tools which I use if they want them. And I don't advertise. People come to me still. So, you know, I see myself still doing this when I'm 90. So, yeah, it's great. It's so exciting. And I feel I have a lot more to offer now because I am so authentic. And the ego is not so important anymore. I'm not out to prove myself. I've written some educational manuals. And that's really what I do.
Well, congratulations, Lynn. It's a pleasure to talk to you. And you've set the standard high, but we can all achieve it if we'll just sizzle at 70. That's what we're talking about here, everyone. Lynn Trail, spelled T-R-A-I-L-L. Her book, Sizzling at 70, Victim to Victorious. Lynn, tell us how to get your book.
Well, you can get it from any bookshops, Amazon, or my website, www.trailblaze.com, that's with two L's, or from the Balboa website. But any major bookstores, you can procure it. Amazon's a good spot. Yeah, it's available. It's out there.
It's everywhere.
It's Lynn, everywhere.
Lynn, thanks for being with us on Indie Book Publishing.
Oh, thank you, Indie Book Publishing. I really appreciated speaking with you this morning.
And this interview has been brought to everyone by Balboa Press.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Get ready to live La Bella Vita with Dawn Catherine on Toginet.com. Live La Bella Vita. If you're wanting to know all the beauty tricks of the trade and the latest fashion trends before everyone else, this is your show. If you admire celebrities' beauty and their fashion sense, this is your show. Do you love wine and want to know more about the process it takes to make wine from the vine to the bottle? This is your show. Live La Bella Vita. For more on the show and your host, check out our website, labellavitacosmetico.com. This is the kind of show you can sink your teeth into. If you enjoy traveling and food and family, all with an Italian flair, then you can live La Bella Vita with your host, Dawn Catherine. Wednesday nights at midnight, 11 p.m. Central on toginet.com.
Mark Lipinski is coming to TogiNet. It's Creative Mojo with Mark Lipinski. A live two-hour show Wednesday afternoon starting at 3, 2 Central on TogiNet.com. Creative Mojo. It's fun, entertaining, informative, inspirational, and illuminating. Lipinski has worked on such shows as Oprah, The View, The Joan Rivers Show, and Ricky Lake. He's busy, but he's got the drive to share with Creative Mojo, dedicated to the modern crafter and crafting lifestyle. Dive into the info and enjoy everything from celebs to entertainment news to recipes, quilting and needlework, knitting, painting, woodworking, Christmas crafts, and so much more. This show boldly encourages you to discover and harness your own creative spirit by living creatively every day. For more on Mark and the show, check out marklipinski.com. Don't miss the fun. It's Creative Mojo with Mark Lipinski, Wednesday afternoon starting at 3, 2 Central on toginet.com.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, English First, How Not to Talk Like a Christian Yuppie. And the author is Pan Troglodytes. And Pan joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to you by Abbott Press. Hello, Pan.
Hi.
Good to have you with us. You're going to challenge our behavior as Christians, our speaking, our communicating. Let me read what you've written for everyone's general information, then we'll get into the details. You say, communicating the importance of proper diction for Christians in your book, English First. You provide a guide for learning to talk and write like a humble Christian in American English. You have resources that help point out how to avoid using vogue words, jargon, redundancies, and other overly contrived, complicated, or awkward words that sometimes make people look pretentious, conceited, ignorant, and foolish. That's a pretty strong introduction, but at the same time, you sound like you're on a mission. Tell us about yourself and why you decided to do this.
I listened to the Verbal Advantage, which is a vocabulary building program by Charles Elster. And I learned a few things, and I like to share it with people. Now, there are some mistakes, we all make that, like saying, I could care less rather than I could not care less. And that's neither here or there. The phrase close proximity is a redundancy because the word proximity itself already means closeness. So saying or writing close proximity is like saying closeness. If you're going to use a fancy word like proximity, then let the word do its job and avoid the word close. So I won't say that really hurts our witness for Christ or anything. However, I have to admit, I personally think that there are some words and phrases that we use, vulgar words or phrases that really makes you look kind of pretentious, proud. And as Christians, I thought we were supposed to be humble. We're supposed to be, more down to earth, humble people. So I just want to point that out, and hopefully some people will have to learn a few things from what I wrote.
You're not an English teacher or professor. What makes you think you can tell others how to talk or write?
Well, that's the point, actually. I'm not an English teacher or professor. I consider myself to be a normal, average guy, which is a common person. And I think that any common, average person can learn how to talk and write like an intelligent, educated person if they would listen to the Verbal Advantage program and read my book. In the program, he teaches you a lot of hard words, difficult words, and that's fine. You want to talk and write like a smart person, learn a lot of complicated words. But I guess that to me, for a Christian, it's more important to just avoid a lot of common errors and mistakes, like in pronunciation or diction, like saying I could care less rather than I could not care less.
And there's other words, common errors that you say we should avoid. Give us another example, like forte, is it?
Well, if the word F-O-R-T-E, if you use that word to mean your strength, your specialty, what you're good at, people say, well, in high school my forte was English or math or science. It's actually supposed to be pronounced with one syllable, like the word fort, F-O-R-T. Now, if the word F-O-R-T-E appears on music sheet, however, like if you're a singer, if you play a musical instrument, then yeah, that's pronounced forte, but I think that's a different language, like Italian, forte, fortissimo, play or sing loud or very loud. So yeah, that's pronounced forte, but used in common everyday language to mean your strength, your specialty, what you're good at. Well, in college, my forte was science. It's supposed to be pronounced with one syllable, like the word fort, F-O-R-T.
What are vogue words?
Vogue words are, I think, fancy words that we use to substitute for more common, ordinary words. And I think we often use them because it makes us sound smarter. However, sometimes the fancy words that we're using, they're not exact synonyms of the words that we're replacing. So, you don't sound smarter. You sound, a little bit ignorant when you use it, okay? And like I said, we Christians are supposed to be humble. And using vulgar words and jargon and language, that high-flown language that makes you seem a little bit, stuck up, arrogant, conceited, I don't think that's the way we want to be perceived. Okay.
Give us some examples.
Now, a long time ago, for the last, 10 or 20 years ago, I've noticed that, everybody often uses the word impact. Almost nobody uses the word affect, A-F-F-E-C-T, or effect, E-F-F-E-C-T anymore. Okay? I said to myself, and I understand why they're doing this. They think that, impact is a more eloquent way of saying affect or effect. So everything has to have an impact. Nothing can have just an effect or effect or influence or consequence anymore. But, when you use the word impact all the time, it's really annoying. And you're using in place of words like affect, infect, effect, influence, consequence, educate, teach, train, improve, benefit, edify, bless. You don't look smart. In fact, it's the opposite. Okay. And people use awful words like impactful instead of impressive or effective. If I don't like that. Emulate. Have you noticed that nobody uses the word imitate anymore? Everybody uses the word emulate. Why? I guess we think that emulate is a more eloquent way of saying imitate. So we say to ourselves, well, everybody's using the word emulate. So, if I want to sound smart, I have to use the word emulate too. So, we think that emulate is an exact synonym of imitate. Not really. Now, imitate means what you think it means, and to be exactly like, to mimic, to duplicate. But emulate is a little bit stronger word. It means to be equal to or excel, surpass, be better than, be greater than. Now, the real problem comes in if, a lot of us Christians, Sunday school teachers, pastors, they say, well, as Christians, we should emulate Jesus Christ or God. Well, I think they're saying, we should be just like Jesus Christ or God, which is true, but knowing that the word emulate really means to be equal to or excel, surpass, be greater than, be better than, then they're saying that we should try to be better than Jesus Christ or God. You can't be better than Jesus Christ or God. That's wrong. That's blasphemy, really. So, leverage. Lately I've heard a lot of people, pastors, Christians, using the word leverage as a fancy synonym for almost every verb you can think of, like use or manage or exploit, or even a synonyms for nouns like power or control. Okay, the word leverage is just a noun that means advantage. But lately, I've heard people say, you need to leverage your time, your money, your resources to give glory to God. Okay, why don't you speak plain English and tell me to use my money or manage my time, prioritize my time to glorify God, okay? This sounds a little bit pretentious, using leverage. And even in a phrase like, what is that I've heard lately? Oh, we use Bible stories to leverage good behavior out of our kids. Okay, but wherever you're replacing now, okay? Coerce, extract, pry. Educate, train, teach, encourage. Okay, stop this. Okay, if you use the word leverage, then see if you can replace it with a noun, advantage. Okay, telling me to advantage my time, advantage my money, advantage my resources, that doesn't make a lot of sense. Okay. The word unique is that's just overused by a lot of people. We think of it as a synonym of rare, uncommon, peculiar, special, exceptional, outstanding, excellent, a lot of other normal adjectives. Okay. Well, the word unique really means just one of a kind, and that's all it means. And we also qualify it with, clarify with very or extremely unique. Okay. Well, unique just means one of a kind, and either you're one of a kind or you're not. So you can't be very or extremely one of a kind. You're either one of a kind or you're not. And you go around, saying that everything is one of a kind, every person, place, or thing, then eventually no one believes you. Okay.
Well, good examples, Pan. Now, the second part of your book is how to read the Bible. Explain what you're trying to achieve there.
Well, I think a lot of people who call themselves Christians, I don't think they've ever read the entire Bible through. Well, they may go to church or Sunday school and they read a few verses here that they're told to read. But as far as reading the entire Bible through, No, most of them probably haven't. And, you know, their excuse, one of the main excuses is that, well, you know, it's so hard to understand. It's true. Some parts of the Bible are difficult to understand, may seem, you know, even unfair. But if you use one or more good study Bibles, like I like a good conservative study Bible, like a John MacArthur study Bible, and then, you know, you can add, you know, one or two other study Bibles and read the biblical commentaries, and that will help explain a lot of those parts, okay, that are hard to understand. In other words, you know, the average Christian, I mean, most of us are not pastors, most of us are not called to go to seminary school and learn the original Greek or Hebrew manuscript, but you don't have to, okay? If you need a good study Bible, you know, reading biblical commentaries from theologians who have already studied the original Greek or Hebrew manuscripts, and they have a better understanding of how to explain certain parts of the Bible that are hard to understand in its proper context, okay? And the other thing is that, you know, the two of the basic tenets of Orthodox Christianity are, you know, we're saved by faith alone, not works, whereas a lot of other religions and cults are based upon works, working your way to heaven. And we believe that, you know, once saved, always saved, whereas, you know, a lot of religions, a lot of cults, they believe that we can lose our salvation because, once again, if it's based on works, then, you know, perhaps any particular day or week or month or year, well, maybe we haven't done enough good things or we've done too many bad things and we can lose our salvation. And, you know, we know the Bible verses that support our belief that it's by faith only, not works. And once saved, always saved. But there are other parts of the Bible that seem to contradict that and seem to suggest that, yes, it is faith and works, and you can lose our salvation. And different religions and cults, when you argue with them, they'll take advantage of those verses. They'll read them in a context. And we need to know how to respond to that. We need to know what, you know, those verses are really saying.
Another point that you feel strongly about is helping your children do well on their SATs, obviously to know the English language well, and you promote verbal advantage. We've just got a couple minutes left here, Pan. Why is this particular guidebook or textbook, Verbal Advantage, so important?
Well, I remember taking my SATs in high school, and, you know, they will inundate you with all these, you know, strange vocabulary words, many of which I'd never even heard of. So, yeah, they use a lot of, you know, complicated vocabulary words, and I'm sure there may be other programs. And the Verbal Advantage company, they have specific programs that Mr. Elster has written specifically for, you know, high school students to learn. To, you know, a lot of vocabulary to prepare them for the SAT, at least the verbal portion of the SAT. But even if you just, you know, buy the Verbal Advantage program itself and just listen to it and encourage your children to listen to it, you know, several times, I think that will help prepare them, introduce them to a lot of some of the more difficult vocabulary words that they'll probably encounter. And I think, you know, it'll also teach them to avoid a lot of common errors and mistakes, you know, that most of us make. And it'll instill in them good, you know, writing and talking skills for the rest of their lives. So I think that's important as well.
In about a minute left in our discussion, Pan, now you also are helping Christians, coaching Christians to speak correctly and simply about today's issues like abortion, homosexuality. Those are in the news all the time.
Yeah, and, you know, there are Bible verses that deal specifically with that. So I know that there are a lot of, you know, moderate to liberal Christians who think they can be, you know, pro-choice, you know, pro-gay marriage, and still be a Christian. And I'm not going to argue with them, but, you know, when you read what specific Bible verses say about that, then, you know, you really claim to be a Bible-believing Christian. It's kind of hard to reconcile, you know, holding certain political views with what the Word of God really says about it.
We've been listening to Pan Troglodytes. He is the author of his book, English First, How Not to Talk Like a Christian Yuppie. Pan, tell us how to get your book.
Well, it's available on Amazon.com right now, so I guess you can go on there and order it.
And you can get it at Abbott Press, your publisher as well. Do you have a website?
I don't have a website myself, but you know, either buy it from Amazon.com or Abbott Press.
Okay, very good. Well, Pan, thanks for being with us on Indie Book Publishing.
Well, thank you.
And this interview has been brought to everyone by Abbott Press.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Get ready to laugh along with This Little Parent Stayed Home with Ali Lopreet. Friday evenings at 6, 5 Central on TogiNet.com. This is a truly realistic, no-nonsense, tell-it-like-it-is method that will have you laughing and crying, surviving while struggling, and hammering away at the hardships as you travel through the greatest journey of your life. Get empowered by joining thousands of other parents who have also decided to take a leap of faith into a double career with longer hours and half the pay simply because of the love they have for their children. Together, we are rebuilding a new economy that will support us rather than enslave us. Never again will we have to choose between raising our children and earning to provide for them. It won't be easy, but it will be worth it. For more on Allie and her success, check out her website, OurMilkMoney.com. So come get empowered with This Little Parent Stayed Home with Allie Lopreet, Friday afternoons at 6, 5 Central on TogiNet.com.
People think I've made it. I'm popular. I seem happy all the time. I have great clothes and I'm involved in everything. But I have questions, doubts, and fears, just like every other teenager. That's why I'm glad for Teen Talk Radio, where it's all about choices.
Join us for Teen Talk Radio with Nicole Odell, Thursday nights at 10, 9 Central on TogiNet.com.
The choices we have to make that can alter the course of our lives. Life is too much pressure if we try to go it alone. I tune in to Teen Talk Radio with Nicole Odell every week to get reminded that I'm not alone. Nicole Odell is an expert on what happens in the lives of teenagers. Join her as she deals with topics like peer pressure, purity, drugs, alcohol, and many other things that might come up along the way. She writes books and speaks to people all over the place, but she says her favorite moments are when she can pull up a chair and chat with teens about what's important to us.
For more information on Nicole and her books, go to NicoleOdell.com. Then join us for Teen Talk Radio with Nicole Odell, Thursday nights at 10, 9 Central on TogiNet.com.
Teen Talk Radio, where it's all about choices.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, Panic Attacks and Me, and the author is Kay Hammond, and Kay joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to you by Balboa Press. Hello, Kay.
Hi, Steve.
This is going to be very instructive for all of us, and of course, writing this book has really been a help to you, and it's going to help a lot of others who experience what we now know are panic attack. Years ago, when you were growing up, didn't understand what was going on, and so we'll talk about those details, but let me read what you've written in general about your book. You say, panic attacks and me shows different ways to work through the fear of being paralyzed. The book gives examples of ways that have worked for me through the panic situations and gives points to think about to help work through the fear. The points to remember are always to reduce the fear that can make life unmanageable and give ways to find peace. May these be of help to you and yours. And so that is the great mission here. I know, Kay, that you really want to help others, don't you?
Very definitely. That's why I knew these words had something more powerful that needed to get out to the world.
Well, let's go back. When did you first realize, how young were you when these panic attacks literally controlled you?
I learned very young, maybe 7 or 8, or even as much as 5 when I started school, that I wasn't perfect. And I've always been known to have a sin over my head. And this is before learning disabilities were understood. So when I got divorced in 1990, I wanted to find out what the sin over my head was. So I had an IQ test, and this brought to light that I have an auditory processing problem, which means that I have trouble understanding people when they talk fast or loud. And this is what my mother did to me. She talked loud and fast, and so it made my life unmanageable.
And so
it made me live in panic attacks.
And so this sin over your head, that's what you heard throughout your younger years from your family? I mean, was it from more than your mother?
No, just my mother.
And you did.
I remember it.
And what would these panic attacks do to you?
They would paralyze me. I wouldn't be able to function.
I mean,
the only emotion that wasn't stamped out of me was crying. So I cried quite a bit, and at school I was known as a crybaby.
My goodness. So that was really tough on you because of you just couldn't control that of that stress, and then you would erupt into tears.
Right.
How old were you when you finally realized that this was a learning disability that you were experiencing?
It was in 1990 or 1991. I got divorced in 1990.
So it was all through your younger years, your teenage years, your early years of marriage. You had no idea.
Right. So when I got divorced, I wanted to find out what I needed to do to get to feeling better. And after I was diagnosed with auditory processing problem, my parents were determined that I could find help for that. So here in Texas, we have what's called the Texas Rehabilitation Commission. And I went to many places in the Texas Rehabilitation Commission, and it took me 8 years to get help through them. And I had a speeding ticket, so I took a defensive driving course. And the teacher of the course had a book of business cards. So I went through there and found a speech therapist and was able to get help through her. She convinced the rehab that she could help me, and I said that I needed the help. And so I was able to get twice a week for 8 weeks help for them free.
And that has really helped you.
Right.
Well, we can understand you really clearly.
Well, thank you.
I know that's something that I'm sure it's been a frustration, but it's great to make progress, right?
Right.
Now, how many people
know that I'm not alone?
Right, and how many people are affected by panic attacks? It's a pretty big figure, I think.
I really don't know that, but it's amazing to me that when I'm mentioning that I wrote this book about the amount of people who are interested and know people who have suffered from it.
Right, I was telling you before the interview, I have a son and who struggled with it in his younger years and his teenage years. He seems to be over it now. I'm not sure how he did that, but it's something that is. I know it really confused my wife and I how to help him.
Well, for me, it's having a power greater than myself that I can count on to lead me where I need to go. Because if I'm confused in what I need to do, if I can just turn it over to a power greater than myself, whom I call God, it helps. But to know that somebody's there that cares about me and wants the best for me.
And you say that that higher power, the power greater than you, doesn't necessarily need to be God.
No, definitely not. I've been in recovery for 22 years, and when I started that walk, I had a shameful, vindictive God, and I was told that I needed to have somebody that I could trust. It didn't necessarily need to be a God figure, so I had to fire the God of my upbringing.
Now, your mother was very tough on you. Your father, though, was more compassionate and listened to you.
Yes.
And helped
but he
you.
He had to pick his battles with mother.
And then there was a kind lady across the street.
Oh, definitely.
And tell us how that helped you at that time, how she helped you.
Well, she gave me a listening ear. And she would, I got to do things with her. Also, it helped me to have a place to get out of my home. I went around the neighborhood with and made friends of the adults in the neighborhood.
So today, how have you learned to release the pain when these panic attacks start to come upon you? How do you deal with them?
Well, the best way that I have is to journal, to maybe write a God letter or a letter to whoever you want to your higher power or to a good friend or whatever. And these letters do not necessarily need to be mailed. If you're afraid somebody's going to read them, you can tear them up or burn them. But it still has the same effect. It gets the wording and all out of your system.
Well, that's interesting. Sometimes things as simple as that, just writing down what you're feeling at that moment?
Yes. To release the stress and release the pain.
Now, your book, how is your book laid out? Is it different chapters concerning different types of events that could cause this kind of stress?
Right. Different events, like when I lost my dog or I lost my keys, or it can really be applied to any different situation. I just was able to list a few in my book, but this system works very well for any kind of panic attacks. And it gives points to remember in each chapter, which shows the different, write it down, who do you trust, and a variety of different things that will help you work through the situation that you're in.
When you have a situation, if a young child has a situation where a parent is yelling at that child, that really...
That's abuse.
Yeah. That doesn't help at all, right? That doesn't help at all. Obviously, it makes it even worse.
In the system that we live in, sometimes this kind of thing may go to legal action as abuse.
And that's what you had to deal with.
I had to deal with it, yes, without any support except from Jenny.
So at the end of each chapter, you have a litany of hope and action to take. Tell us about that.
Well, it's a litany that helped me work through all the various attacks. And they vary from chapter to chapter in that each situation has its own unique problems. But the litany is all basically the same.
And you also have some poems. Is it possible that you could read a couple for us?
Be happy to. I enjoyed the poems. In fact, this book started out being a poem. This is one of my favorites. God, lead me, guide me, strengthen me, show me the way to peace and serenity. You lead and I will follow. I trust that you know the way to peace and serenity. I am yours.
Well, that's very reassuring and very direct and just perfect, I'm sure, for you when you were writing that. And, of course, it will help others as they ponder that. Now, what would you say to those who are going through these panic attacks? What would be some of the best things they can do?
Well, I'm not a doctor, and I don't want to get into legal implications by answering a question like that.
But what worked for you? What was the best thing that you
found? The best thing for me was to get in Al-Anon, or to get in Codependency Anonymous.
Mm-hmm. So you had a place to go and share with others.
Right.
And to realize that you weren't just alone, that you weren't the only one struggling.
Right.
That must have been a kind of a freedom feeling.
Yes. And what was really so wonderful is that I have a cousin who's been in Al-Anon 20 years longer than I have. And she was kind of estranged from my family because she was in Al-Anon, which the folks call a cult. And when I got in recovery, she put me under her wing, and it brought her back to my parents. So it was a win-win situation.
Well, we all need each other, don't we?
Right.
Any closing thoughts, Kay? Anything you'd like to...
You want to know the poem?
Oh, yes, please. Thank you.
God has a plan for me. I have no idea where he is leading. I have faith that it is for my good. I have been experiencing the miracles. When I feel overwhelmed, he says, pedal. Put one foot in front of the other. He helps me do that. When I need money, it comes. When I need quiet time, it comes. When I need love, it comes. When I need to be creative, it comes. I know that God loves me. I do the best that I can, and that's all God asks. I'm grateful for having God. I am grateful for God is leading me.
Well, we're grateful that you're sharing your story, Kay. Thank you for being with us on Indie Book Publishing. Tell us how to get your book.
I have some books, or it is available through Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com. I'm trying to get some other bookstores to carry it. That's in the works.
Well, very good. I hope you're a great success. Certainly, many could benefit from your story. So thank you so much, Kay.
Well, thank you, Steve.
And this interview with Kay Hammond, the author of Panic Attacks and Me, is brought to you by Balboa Press.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.